Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Live Special number 307, recorded Tuesday, October 4th, 2016, Dreamforce in San Francisco. This TWiT Live Special is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Set your business, portfolio, blog, or wedding apart at Squarespace. Enter offer code TWiT and get 10% off. I am Megan Maroney, host of Tech News Today and iOS Today, and we are here at Dreamforce 2016 in San Francisco. Dreamforce is one of, if not the biggest tech conference in the world. It is full of amazing goodness, IoT, AI, machine learning, all the stuff that we love to talk about in this network, and I am super excited to get started. You ready? Let's go! Talk about kids coding and how important it is for their future and our future. At Dreamforce, we caught up with a teacher who is teaching her kids code and brought them to Dreamforce to learn. This is Zelda Allison. She's at Roosevelt Middle School in Oakland. Hi, Zelda.
Hi.
So what do you teach at Roosevelt?
So I am our co-robotics team teacher, and I'm also running our Girls Who Code Club.
Awesome. And so how did you get them to come to Dreamforce?
Dreamforce noticed that our school, we're trying to build a tech culture, and so they have funding for different projects, and they invited us to come over today and tomorrow to bring our kids to learn more about tech.
So how much coding do they do in school right now?
Right now, we actually have one course of coding and robotics, and we have our robotics club after school. We'll also have our Girls Who Code after school as an after-school project, and we also have a semester-long Maker program that 6th, 7th, and 8th graders go through for the year.
Awesome. And so what are they going to be doing here today?
Today, they're building little jousting robots in Lego, and they're also learning how to code using blocks and learning Minecraft coding.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking to us, Zelda. It's great to talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
We are at Dreamforce, and they have a special area set up over here just for young coders. It's set up by code.org, and I am with two young coders, Samantha and Vincent. How old are you, Samantha?
I'm 12.
How old are you, Vincent?
I'm 12.
So you're in seventh grade?
Yeah.
And so do you take coding in school?
Not this year.
It's probably in Mr. Belsky's class. Like, Mr. Belsky is our technology teacher. Her technology teacher. I'm in orchestra, complete different, but I still work with them.
So, do you like to play with Legos at home?
I don't. This is actually, like, an opportunity for me to, like, work with Legos. And, like, I'm actually enjoying it because, like, earlier I was, like, struggling. I was like, I give up. I was just, like, done.
How about you, Vincent? Do you like Legos at all?
Yeah, I think it's, like, the more that you try and, like, build it and, like, you learn from your mistakes, like, that's how, like, makes it fun and, yeah.
How about Minecraft? Do you play Minecraft at home?
I don't. When I was little, yeah, it's pretty addictive.
So what are you most excited about learning today?
Today, I don't really think that there's nothing to look forward to, but, like, just working here with the Legos, it's, like, I know better to, like, once I'm modeling something, I'm, like, battling it and trying it out, and I'm improving the more if I, like, win or lose, and it's, like, helping me a lot because I can learn from my mistakes, like what Vincent said.
So what about you, Vincent?
Yeah, kind of like Samantha, yeah, you can learn from your mistakes if you keep on trying. Like, once you try, you can't ever give up. Like, I gave up one time, and then I totally doubted because
like, I went to, like, somewhere, and then, like, they, like, kept on talking about it, and then I was like, oh, I should have kept the other one. So, yeah.
So you're learning how to try and try again, right?
Yeah.
What do you think you want to be when you grow up, Samantha?
I want to become a writer.
Cool. So that's a good skill to learn, to keep trying, right? What about you, Vincent?
Probably in a local PD.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. It's so exciting. All right. Take care.
Bye.
Salesforce is obviously a different company. We're at Dreamforce, and there's meditation centers. There are kids coding. It's just amazing what they do beyond just the general product. I'm here with Cheryl Porro. She's SVP of Product and Technology for Salesforce.org. Welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you. Welcome.
So tell me a little bit about what you do for Salesforce.
So I run technology and products for Salesforce.org, and we build products for nonprofits, for higher educational institutions, and K-12 schools, and then I also build all the technology we use internally.
And so we're here, we talked to some kids who are learning to code, we talked to some teachers who brought their students here. Tell us about what you're trying to accomplish here in the Kids Coding Camp.
Well, you know, Salesforce is really passionate about equality. And we think it's really important that everyone get to participate in what is happening with technology. You know, so much of our world is transforming because of technology. And if everyone doesn't have equal access to the opportunities, then we're all at a disservice. So we believe equality begins with education, equality begins with kids, and we're so passionate about STEM education and really giving all kids at San Francisco's Unified, at Oakland Unified, an opportunity to just really get their hands on the technology and just see how fun it is.
So how long has Salesforce.org been around? How long has that part of the organization been around?
Salesforce.org has been around since the beginning. Salesforce.org was born of the 1-1-1 model. Salesforce, at its inception, set aside 1% of product, 1% of employee time, and 1% of equity to start what has become Salesforce.org. And now we're doing so much. We have over 29,000 nonprofits and educational institutions using our technology. We have donated 1.5 million hours of employee time, and we have donated $28 million in strategic grants to educational institutions like San Francisco School District, Oakland School District, as well as workforce development programs like Europe and GenesisWorks. So we've been there since the beginning.
So what does that mean for a Salesforce employee, that 1-1-1, if you are hired onto Salesforce, what does that mean for you in terms of what you can do for volunteering as an employee?
Before I joined Salesforce.org, I spent 8.5 years with Salesforce.com. So I've been with the company a long time, and I know that it's a great recruiting tool and a great retention tool. Employees really care about their communities, and they want to be able to make a difference in a way that works for them. And we have employees that do amazing things, that have raised millions of dollars for their causes, that have helped nonprofits that they're closely work with. And it's just such an opportunity for every employee to really give back in a way that works, and it's so sticky. Even personally, it's really why I've been here for so long.
Well, thank you so much. Cheryl Porro is the SVP of Technology and Product for Salesforce.org. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Thank you. Have a great Dreamforce.
Thanks.
We just got finished watching Dream Pitch, which is sort of like Shark Tank. It was all some of the Shark Tank judges. We had some really interesting pitches that we got to see and then got to see them criticized. It was a learning experience for everyone. I'm here with Julia Barrett, who is the Global Program Director for Salesforce for Startups. Hi, Julia.
Hey.
So we're here in front of an Airstream. We're in the woods. What is the idea behind this startup valley?
Well, we're here in the Trailhead Zone, which is here to celebrate everything that is developer and admin and startup centric here at Dreamforce. And the Startup Valley is really where we're showcasing a lot of the members of our Salesforce for Startups program. So every day we'll be rotating out 8 to 10 different startups who are really from all over the globe. I think we've got startups from 10 different countries represented here, and they all use different Salesforce products. So they're here just to showcase and talk about what they do and how Salesforce helps them do it. We actually partnered with an organization called Recess, who work with universities. They have a whole pitch competition program with universities, and they helped us deal with all the back ends. And while we were running around gathering our judges, which, you know, I think the show says it all, they were amazing. And we worked through the same judging criteria that they use today during Dream Pitch. We worked through several different selection processes.
That's awesome. And so how is there something that that some of these startup owners have to overcome working with Salesforce? Salesforce is a big corporation, and, you know, they come from a small, from a startup. Sometimes it's only two people, as we saw today. What are the challenges of coming and working with you guys, a large corporation?
Well, Salesforce for Startups, our program, it's global, it's open to anyone, and we're really here to help startups understand the breadth of products that we offer here at Salesforce. Often, if they're familiar with Salesforce, they think of us only as CRM, and we're so much more. We're development platforms and customer service, marketing automation tools. And so our program is really focused on helping them feel more comfortable considering Salesforce as an option while they work through their product discovery. We really want to help them get involved with Salesforce and our products at an earlier stage so that they're not left scrambling once they hit product market fit.
And so tell me about the incubator. When did that start? And tell us about that.
So we launched the Salesforce incubator last week. And we're really excited to welcome 14 different startups into our first batch. And the first batch will be focused on SaaS apps built on our platform. Our next batch will launch the applications actually in November, so that's exciting. And we'll focus on AI. So in April, we'll welcome a new batch in focused on building AI apps with Salesforce.
So do they get to all live in a house like in Silicon Valley?
I mean, that would be awesome, but no. And maybe they're really happy about that. But we do give them real estate. It's really an awesome office. I actually joined Salesforce with Heroku, and so we're in the same building that Heroku and Steelbrick and Salesforce IQ are in. And we have a really, really awesome space. And we're really focused on helping them innovate to be customer-focused and inspiring a lot of peer-to-peer collaboration. So it's a very open space, and we're really encouraging that internetworking, which is working out really well, even in its second week now. I'm really excited to see where we take it.
And so what advice would you give to people that might be watching this that have a startup or just an idea to get involved?
Well, I mean, start building an app. Like, it's really easy to talk about stuff or to come up with ideas, but you got to get going. One of the startups that we actually featured earlier today in the Startup Valley, MasterTech, they're based in out of São Paulo, Brazil. And what they actually do is help people build out and prototype their ideas. So there are ways, like, even if you're not a developer, there are ways to kind of just get started, like, get it done. So if you have an idea, just get going.
Well, thank you, Julia. Julia Barrett is from Salesforce for Startups. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Squarespace. This Twit Live special is brought to you by Squarespace, the best place to create a beautiful, professional-looking website. You will not believe how easy it is. I'm currently working on my Squarespace site. Get ready to see it. It'll be at meganmaroney.com. You just wait. It's going to be beautiful. Sites look professionally designed regardless of your skill level and no coding required. Squarespace allows you to install multiple templates on a single website and work on multiple designs at once. Their stunning magazine-style templates include interactive features like grid-style landing pages, which allow visitors to browse through all posts in one place. And with built-in mobile, all of their designs are responsive, so your website looks great on any device. Get a free custom domain with an annual purchase and access to 24/7 customer support. It's never been easier to sell online. Power your business with Squarespace Commerce, the only platform that lets you create, manage, brand your store in a beautiful way and accept payments instantly. Their plans include many features for your growing business. They recently introduced advanced analytics for commerce, allowing you to view the traffic of visitors in real time, abandoned checkouts, device filtering, and more. Join over 1 million Squarespace customers and start your free trial at squarespace.com. Make sure you use the offer code TWIT, that's T-W-I-T, at checkout to get 10% off. And we thank Squarespace for sponsoring this show. We are here with one of the participants in Dream Pitch. Dream Pitch was three startups. They got up there, they gave their pitch. It was amazing, and then they had to be criticized by some of the Shark Tank judges. And so tell us your name and your company and a little bit about what your company does.
Sure. My name is Tal Frankfurt, and I'm the founder and CEO of CRM Market, which is, if you can think about it, as like Angie's List or Match.com for the Salesforce ecosystem. We basically connect talent, Salesforce talent, with customers who are looking to implement Salesforce.
And so what did you learn from the pitch?
What did I learn? It was a great experience. I think that the big thing that I take home with me is maybe to be more, connect more to the emotion. We had a lot of numbers and a lot of statistics, and they were looking for more emotional connection. So maybe we'll lead with that next time.
And so how long did you have to work on your pitch, to come up with your pitch?
Yeah, we had, I think, about 2 weeks to work on the pitch. It was the first time I'm pitching CRM Market. So it was first time I'm pitching to investors. So it was a great experience. It was very, very educational, as I said on the stage.
You did. You also said you were grateful for the opportunity, which was so great to hear. Did you learn, would you do anything differently next time you had the opportunity?
We prepped a lot for the pitch, for the 4 minute, but I think that I would prep more also on the Q&A. So I think that's maybe the main thing that I would do differently. But again, it's such an amazing opportunity to come here and speak in front of, I think we were like 5,000 people in the crowd and 50,000 people watching remotely. What an amazing experience. Like, how can I get something like that again? So I'm very grateful for it.
So you had to go first, which must have been difficult. How did they choose the order that you guys were going in?
I hope it was random. I hope it was random. It was brutal to go first, but yeah, I didn't have a say so.
Well, thank you so much. Good luck with your company, and take care. I am here with Steve, who was the second person to pitch at Dream Pitch, and I have some questions. I promise not to be as intimidating as Chris Sacca or Mark Cuban. Tell us a little bit about your company.
Pinium, we're 100% native video solution built on Salesforce.com. So our whole strategy is to really turn Salesforce into enterprise-wide multimedia platform, meaning that we can play all types of content natively within Salesforce, and nobody else in the world can do that today.
And how did you get involved with Dream Pitch?
Actually, a bunch of my friends texted me and told me I should do it. I had friends like, literally, you guys should do this, and I wasn't planning on doing it because I just didn't really have the time, because it takes like 4 or 5 hours to fill it out. And then I decided, no, I might as well throw it out there. And I had forgotten that I had done it, actually, to be totally honest with you. And then I got an email. I was a finalist. I'm like, for what? Oh, yeah. And then it got pretty competitive. But it was just a lot of friends said that we have something that's pretty cool, and they thought we should do it.
And you looked pretty confident up there. Like, do you do a lot of pitches? Do you speak in front of people pretty often?
That's my first pitch I've ever done.
Wow, that was impressive.
So, thank you. I mean, I guess, like, I do selling of our product, and I'm in front of people, and I'm comfortable with that. But I don't think I've ever done anything more than 100 people total. And I'm not even sure if I've actually presented to 5,500 people total. But that's our first pitch, and no, so I'm not – I haven't done it, but I was prepared, and I'll be honest with you, I had my daughter's little card in my pocket that I was holding, and she wrote, "I love you, Daddy," and my son had told me, "Daddy, just try and do your best," and gave me a high five, and so that's kind of empowering, right? So it was comfortable knowing that my kids were there, you know.
And at the end, they asked everybody, you know, what do you want to say, and you tell everybody what you decided to say instead of speaking to the crowd or to yourself.
I think I said I just want to thank my wife for putting up with me for the last 3 weeks because, I mean, this has been all-consuming, right? And I don't think that she needed to thank you, and she deserves a lot of the credit for our success. So I wanted her to know I love her. So.
Well, if we've learned anything at Dreamforce, it's thank your wife.
Yes. I've had a lot of calls from other people that I thought that was really cool. I have six sisters as well, so they are all pretty stoked right now. They thought I was pretty awesome. But I mean, look, at the end of the day, when you're an entrepreneur, I mean, I have two young children, I'm 44, so without my wife, like, this is a team effort. Just I was up there on stage, but really at the end of the day, it's her and I and my kids building this together. So it was kind of appropriate to thank the woman and the person who's my teammate, right? Because honestly, without her, I'm not here. So literally, I'm not joking. So
well, thank you so much, Steve. Good luck with everything
thank
that you do next.
Thank you very much.
I am here with Marta and Misha. They are the winners of Dream Pitch. They have an app that is a chat bot that I think lets companies test their product with regular people So you can probably give, you just did an amazing pitch and won over a whole bunch of people. So why don't you tell us exactly what your app does?
Yeah, so it's pretty much what you said. So it's a chatbot for testing consumer products. So we work with brands and retailers to help them identify their best sellers and their worst performers before committing to any production decisions, since it's typically very difficult for companies to understand how a product will perform before it actually hits market. So that's kind of the problem we're solving.
And one thing you did that I thought was really impressive was you really gave a quick overview of your background. So you are the tech person. So tell us what your background was.
So before Claire, I was actually, my love was physics. I got an undergrad degree in physics at Yale and then did my PhD in physics at the University of Chicago. And I studied theoretical physics, but then at the same time started consulting for companies like Microsoft on kind of the future of enterprise data due to my kind of background in data science. And I found that I could just be a lot more impactful in industries that needed my skills most. And I got really interested in the retail and CPG and these industries that have to make a lot of decisions that are usually not as data-driven as they could be. And I thought that I could really, or we could really help out, those companies and kind of people in that space optimize their products, because that's kind of the biggest decision. That's like the single most important thing they have to do is to make a right product for their users. And that's something that's usually, you rely on gut feeling. And that's just, it just doesn't really produce really good results when you don't have intelligence that informs you like what products you should make.
And Marta, you have an impressive background also. Tell us about that.
So I worked at Mondelez, which is one of the largest snack companies in the world. So they own brands like Oreo, like Trident, like Cadbury. And so basically I was brought on to create the department that led new product introductions across 165 countries. So given my background and given Misha's background, we thought we were the perfect team to kind of tackle this big problem.
And so you were one of the only groups that got a question from Will.i.am, who was there, and he asked how would you deal with people messing with the bot? I mean, that's the big thing. Like, we have heard of so many bots and like, oh, there's always going to be someone that messes with it. And who wants to talk about how you deal with with someone who just tries to mess with your bot?
So this is something, it's not even about messing with bots, that if you do a survey that asks people what they will buy, it'll just be wrong, because when people don't have money on the line, they're oftentimes just being aspirational. Like, my sister was playing a Rent the Runway game that we ran, and she said she would rent a $200 dress. And I know she's not going to do that because she's a freshman in college, and she'll just not put the money out for that. But our data models know that about our users. We have some information from their Facebook profile, and we use that and some other methods to kind of figure out who's being honest and who's not. So the trolls are, in a sense, kind of eliminated by the data models.
And so how do people sign up for the bot? Is it just like, I'm on Facebook Messenger and I'm just looking for a bot and I want to test some products? How does that work? How do you find the people that use the bot?
Yeah, so people are more than welcome to find our bot. It's just called Claire on Facebook Messenger. But traditionally, when we work with brands and retailers, they actually funnel people to our bot. So they might send out an email to some of their most loyal users asking them for product feedback. And that links directly to our chat bot. So you don't need to like anything. You don't need to message anything. But for anyone who's interested, you can certainly find us on Facebook Messenger.
And what's the impetus for people to use the bot to test products?
So I think a lot of people just want their opinion to be heard, and they want to help their favorite brands or their favorite retailers make products that people love. And so I think it's this beautiful thing where people can actually almost co-create products with their favorite brands.
So one of the only criticisms you got was that you were charging too little for the service. And I think you said $150 per product. And Mark Cuban said you should probably charge $10,000 or some crazy thing. What do you make of that? Like, that price would be so different.
Yeah, so I think it's actually a really great call out by Mark. Because we've been focusing on two industries in particular, apparel and home, those price points kind of makes sense to us because these retailers are testing maybe 10,000 products a year. So to Mark's point, if they're only testing 100 products a year, then that price point seems really low. But as we expand into other industries and other verticals, then I think we definitely need to take a look at our price points. And I think it's a really great call out by Mark.
And so your pitch was very creative. You picked out Chris Sacco was one of the judges, and he always wears the Western shirts, and that was your product. Have you guys done a lot of pitches? It seemed very polished but very authentic as well.
Thank you.
So we've done a couple of pitches in the past, nothing like this, but I think that we were part of the Y Combinator Fellowship in the summer, where they spend the last kind of 2 weeks really preparing you to deliver a pitch in 2 minutes and 30 seconds. So I think that maybe, you know, that helped us out. But otherwise, we just wanted to make something that the judges would connect with, because it's hard to connect with products you don't know about emotionally. And we knew that Chris is into these cowboy shirts, you know, that, you know, he said in the beginning that's kind of like the award he's most proud of. And we were actually, like, worried that it wouldn't be funny somehow, because, like, my delivery wouldn't be good or something like that. So I was worried about that beforehand.
All right. Why did you name the company Claire?
So on the user side, we really wanted to pick a name to kind of personify the experience and make it seem really friendly. So Claire seemed like a great option. And then on the business side, we tell people that Claire stands for clarity on your consumers. So really understanding what your consumers want.
And if people want to go to Facebook and start chatting with Claire, how do they do that?
So they can just look us up on Facebook if you just search Claire.
It's Meet Claire, M-E-E-T, Claire. That's our handle.
Okay.
On Facebook.
Perfect.
Well, Misha, Marta, it's a pleasure to meet you. Good luck. What's next?
So I think the next thing on the horizon is Y Combinator. We're going to be starting in the Winter 17 batch in January. And, yeah, we're really excited about the Salesforce Incubator, really excited about what's to come.
All right. Thank you so much. I am here with Ludo Ulrich. He is head of startup relations for Salesforce. Hi, Ludo.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good. So tell me what you do as head of startup relations.
Yeah, so, you know, Salesforce does a lot of things with startups. You know, we, of course, sell them things. You know, we sometimes help them go to markets. We acquire some of them. We invest some of them. So I'm leading the team that does all the engagement with the startup ecosystem and help them understand what they can build with us, how they can grow, and as well how they can give back. So we have different startup programs to help them basically, you know, engage with Salesforce. So we have an online program called Salesforce Startup with more than 7,000 members. And we also launched very recently the Salesforce Incubator, which is physically present here in San Francisco.
And so we just got finished watching Dream Pitch, and I talked to all the pitchers. Was this the first Dream Pitch?
That was the first Dream Pitch. So it's one of the things as well we love about Dreamforce. We bring always new initiative to put on the showcase some startups that we think are amazing. And so we put together this competition with different teams within Salesforce and bring some amazing judges like, you know, Chris Sacco, Mark Cuban, like definitely here to make a show, as well as, you know, Will.i.am. And the idea is like was to you know, make sure we give them an opportunity to pitch in front of not only the judges, but also all the attendees. Because what I notice is that there's a lot more momentum here at Dreamforce year after year from corporations, from, you know, larger companies want to engage with that innovative ecosystem, right? So that's also in that spirit that we did the Dream Pitch, is like make sure we elevate that relationship between startups and corporation and make sure they can, you know, innovate together.
So there are a lot of people from corporations here, a lot walking the floors. What can people from larger corporations learn from the startups here?
Honestly, they can learn a lot. I think it has to be a mutually beneficial relationship. So, you know, startups can learn from corporations a lot. Corporations can learn from startups on how to innovate and go quick. But I want to go beyond the stereotypes. You know, there is almost this imperative now for founders, for folks who want to actually disrupt an industry, to do very, like, to think about partnerships and to think about how they can actually disrupt that particular industry. You know, gone are the days where it's innovation for the sake of it, right? There was a first wave of innovation where it was about building the infrastructure, literally building the internet, like AOL, for instance, back in the 90s. Then there was a lot of horizontal, like social networks, like search. And now when you look at startups trying to disrupt, like, you know, healthcare or the food that you and I are eating, or fintech, financial services, they need to have that relationship with corporation and with government as well. They need to have this maturity. So there is a lot of bridges that we need to help, you know, facilitate between corporations, some of our customers, Salesforce customers, who are trailblazers and want to actually innovate and bridge the gap that there is sometimes with the startup ecosystem.
So what are some of the challenges that the startups that you talk to that they face coming into the corporate world or getting into the corporate world?
Yeah, there are different challenges. I think it really depends on the maturity of the founding team, right, depending on the background. I think most of the time it's a matter of, you know, effective communication and vocabulary. I think on both sides, there needs to be some sort of, you know, efforts to speak the same language, set the right expectation, set the right milestone. You know, we usually say that corporations don't move at the same pace as startups. I don't think it's the case. You know, startups is a fast-moving company. I think we can move very fast. It's just about setting the right expectation and finding the right match and the right team. You know, there's obvious, you know, candidate for, you know, interaction between startup and corporation, like innovations team. But sometimes you need to go talk to a business team, you know. So I think it's about identifying the right team and having the right vocabulary and the right communication between those different worlds, if you will.
And so what are some of the most interesting startups right now? Like, you don't have to name names, but you can. But some of the areas that you think are really interesting, people that you've talked to lately.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to have favorites, but I have to, you know, encourage you to all who are watching to check, like, the latest batch of the Salesforce Incubator. We just, you know, launched the program last week in San Francisco, and we selected 14 companies. So I'm really excited about all of them. I think that what they all, two things they have all in common. One is they're really focused on their customer. So the companies that I really like personally, and it's, you can tell straight from the first conversation with the founding team, with the founders or any employee for that matter, is this obsession on customers. You know, yes, of course, they need to do fundraising and they need to do a lot of different things and build a business, but it's about being obsessed with the customers. You know, there's a company called Wootrick in the Salesforce Incubator. They literally embed that culture. It's part of their product. It's part of what they're doing. Another thing I noticed in terms of trends and companies that I like is this whole idea of, you know, bringing more intelligence into your solution. You know, Salesforce is announcing a lot of things around Salesforce Einstein this week. I see a lot of startups who are leveraging that, you know, natural language processing, artificial intelligence. All those concepts are great, but at the end of the day, it's all about making, like, the experience for the end user, you know, better and more productive. So, all, you know, we have a lot of companies in the incubator who are actually, you know, leveraging those technologies to, you know, have better productivity for their end customers.
And so you did a panel just before, and I was listening a little bit. You talked about how there was a certain language, like a language that corporations used that startups needed to learn. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, you one thing that I see a lot is stereotyping, like, founders as, like, the millennials, like early 20s, etc. So you don't want to go there. Actually, the average age of entrepreneurs, if you look at, you know, like, the key, you know, entrepreneurial hubs around the world, not Silicon Valley, is more in the mid-30s. So I think I don't want to limit that to vocabulary, but I think, you know, or dress code or things like this. But it's really about having a, you know, a meaningful conversation on both sides to identify what's that mutually beneficial relationship. I think when I said vocabulary, sometimes it's about identifying what could be this particular unique asset that's going to give a competitive advantage on both sides. Because it's going to help this particular company, you know, innovate and please their customers. And it's going to help this company with, like, a 10-people team really go to the next level, access to a bunch of customers or access to the data they didn't have. So again, more than vocabulary, I would rephrase to identifying what's that, you know, unique intersection between the two.
And what about the give back culture? I know Salesforce is really big on that. And how important is that to startups right now?
You know, culture is such a differentiator. You know, in the incubator, we selected companies who are obsessed by their customers, who had that spirit of collaboration. I'm not saying it's a baseline, but, you know, a lot of companies do that. Now we want to make sure that they all have this, you know, idea of giving back as part of their DNA, because it's going to pay back in the future in terms of, you know, retention of employees and, you know, hiring new employees, but also just, you know, we're all in the business of improving the state of the world, right? So I think embedding that as part of the fabric of the company is awesome. It's going to help you, and the sooner the better, because, you know, it's an easier decision to, you know, share 1% of your equity, dedicate 1% of the time of your employee, or dedicate 1% of your product at the beginning when it's 1% of close to nothing, right? So we really strongly encourage all the companies to make that commitment. I was very pleased to see that the 14 companies of the first batch of the incubators actually made that commitment. So it's great to watch, and I think it's really a strong trend in the industry that we see right now.
So another thing that Mark Benioff is really big on is pay equity for genders and diversity. Do you find that that Salesforce attracts a lot of startups that are diverse more than the average because of the culture here?
Yeah, and more than attracting, it's about being proactive as well. It's about reaching out to those communities who are not the traditional, you know, usual suspect you would think who are going to create a company here in Silicon Valley. So, but I think to answer your question, absolutely. I think the level of engagement that Salesforce has in the market, all the way up to the engagement of our CEO, has been very, very positive in terms of, you know, attracting companies who wanted to be in that ecosystem. I think, you know, we call it the Ohana. We use the Hawaiian term at Salesforce. I think a lot of those companies, they want to work with companies that they look alike, that they appreciate, that they think has the same values as them. So as we engage with startups, I can tell you it has been definitely an asset to represent Salesforce. And for those who don't have necessarily this maturity or literally think it's something they cannot deal with yet because they're two employees and they're two co-founders and they're building a product and they're busy, we're trying to do our best to make sure it's not overwhelming. And they can embrace diversity, equality, and a culture of giving back straight from the beginning. It doesn't take a lot of time, and they won't regret that over time, I can guarantee you.
There are people that are watching now that have a startup or have an idea, and they want to get involved. They're excited about what you have been talking about. Where should they go?
Yeah, so two things. Obviously, at any time, you can join Salesforce for Startup, which is our global program, which is going to help you build with Salesforce, grow with Salesforce, and give back with Salesforce. We make it simple to understand those three elements. So it's at startup.salesforce.com, startup.salesforce.com. It's a free program. And then specifically at the end of the year, we'll open the application for the batch 2 of the incubator in San Francisco. So if you are building a company and you'd like to have the privilege potentially to, you know, be part of the next batch, I would encourage you to check it out and make sure you don't miss the different deadlines that we'll share with everyone.
Thanks so much, Ludo.
Thanks so much.
Who is ready for a cocktail? This girl is. It has been an amazing day at Dreamforce in San Francisco. We have seen kids coding. We have seen teachers inspiring their students. We have talked to startup creators who are so in love with their idea and standing in front of thousands of people pitching them. It's been really exciting. And thank you so much for joining us. If you want to subscribe to Twit Live specials, you can go to twit.tv/specials. And if you want to see me, I am on iOS Today every Monday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific. And I am on Tech News Today every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific. Thanks so much for joining us.